Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 7, text 1. We're not already following this order. Okay. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha,
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha,
Maya Saptamana Partha,
Maya Saptamana Partha,
Yogam Yunjan Madashayaha,
Yogam Yunjan Madashayaha,
Asamshayam Samagrammam,
Asamshayam Samagrammam,
Tata Gyasyasi Tach Trinu,
Tata Gyasyasi Tach Trinu.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha,
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha,
the Supreme Lord said,
Mayi,
to me,
asattamanaha,
mind attached,
Partha,
O son of Pratha,
Yogam,
self-realization,
Yunjan,
practicing,
Mat
Ashrayaha, in consciousness of me,
Krishna consciousness,
Asamshayam, without doubt,
Samagram,
completely,
Mam,
me,
Yata,
how.
Gas,
you see, you can know.
Tat,
that.
Shanu,
try to hear. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, now hear, O son of Pratha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Purport. In this seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the nature of Krishna consciousness is fully described. Krishna is full in all opulences, and how he manifests such opulences is described herein. Also, four kinds of fortunate people who become attached to Krishna, and four kinds of unfortunate people who never take to Krishna consciousness are described in this chapter. In the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul, capable of elevating itself to self-realization by different types of yogas. At the end of the sixth chapter, it has been clearly stated that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yogas. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the absolute truth completely, not otherwise. Impersonal Brahmajyoti, or localized Paramatma realization, is not perfect knowledge of the absolute truth, because it is partial. Full and scientific knowledge is Krishna, and everything is revealed to the person in Krishna consciousness. In complete Krishna consciousness, one knows that Krishna is ultimate knowledge beyond any doubts. Different types of yogas are only stepping stones on the path of Krishna consciousness. One who takes directly to Krishna consciousness automatically knows about Brahmajyoti and Paramatma in full. By practice of Krishna consciousness yoga, one can know everything in full, namely the absolute truth, the living entities, the material nature, and their manifestations with paraphernalia. Om Agyan Chiniram Dasya Janamjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahiyam Tathati Shapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapada Kamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamascha Shri Rupam Shagrashatam Sahagana Raghunathanditam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lolita Sri Vishakhanditam Stra Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindho, Dina Bandho Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostate, Tata Kam Shanabo Rangi, Radhe Vrindaneshwari, Prishabhan Sute Devi, Pranamahi Hari Priye, Vanchato Patarubhyascha Kripa Sindho Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Srila Prabhupada comments on in full. Of course, no one knows Krishna in full. Even Krishna doesn't know Krishna in full. This is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the fourth chapter of Hari Lila, that Krishna has his knowledge potency by which we can understand him to some extent and by which he understands everything. So in order to understand himself, he expands his knowledge potency. But having expanded his knowledge potency, he finds that he himself has expanded, and therefore again he has to expand his knowledge potency. Oh, nice. It creates a pleasant atmosphere. A little romance. Again, so again he has to expand his knowledge potency, again he finds that he's expanded. So even Krishna can't fully understand himself. Similarly, his pleasure potency. The pleasure potency expands, but then Krishna expands, but then the pleasure potency expands. So there's a kind of competition between Krishna and his pleasure potency. So this is the nature of the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth is unlimited and also ever increasing. He's ever increasing. So what to speak of us? How will we ever understand Krishna in full? But here Srila Prabhupada gives a perspective on that. That in full means to understand Krishna as the personality of Godhead. The partial understanding is obtained when we approach Krishna as the all-pervading absolute truth, the Brahman realization. He's further approached in Paramatma realization by the yogis who find him within the heart. But then he's completely manifest in Bhagavan realization, or realization of the personality of Godhead. So, in full means as far as possible for a living entity to understand. And that fullness is only possible in Bhagavan realization, and that's only possible in bhakti yoga. Bhaktya mama vijnanati. Yamanyas chasmi. Certainly understanding him in full means understanding him rightly, not understanding him by some speculative method, hiddenness, guesswork. I think this, I think that. But understanding him means through the receptive process, the process of hearing. And Srila Prabhupada will further discuss that in this purport. In fact, let's go. Let's see what Prabhupada says next. One should therefore begin yoga practice as directed in this verse of Bhagavad Gita. I'm sorry, in the last verse of the sixth chapter. Concentration of the mind upon Krishna, the Supreme, is made possible by prescribed devotional service in 9 different forms, of which Shravanam is the first and most important. The Lord therefore says to Arjuna, touch Shranu, hear from me. No one can be a greater authority than Krishna, and therefore by hearing from him, one receives the greatest opportunity to become a perfectly Krishna-conscious person. One has therefore to learn from Krishna directly, or from a pure devotee of Krishna, and not from a non-devotee upstart, puffed up with academic education. Isn't that nicely stated? I always have a special pleasure in hearing Srila Prabhupada put academic endeavors in their place. Academic learning is fine for some purposes, but for understanding Krishna, they don't help us. And in fact, they harm our understanding. Asamshayam, understand me, free from doubts. But the business of the academics is to promote doubts. They're practically the academic method is to say, well, of course it says this, but naturally we can't accept it as face value. At face value, what does this really mean? Well, it could mean this, could mean that. And they stir up doubts where doubts are not necessary. They look for some way, practically speaking, to do a demolition job on the text, to tear it apart, to dissect it, to deconstruct it, and put it back together again in their own creative way. So Prabhupada calls them upstarts. That is to say, who do these people think they are? What right do they have to meddle with Krishna's book? What entrance do they have into this confidential subject matter? They're upstarts. They're not initiated in the process of spiritual understanding. They're not willing to follow even the basic regular principles of spiritual life, or what really we consider even human life. And yet here they are smoking on their pipes and drinking their drinks and telling us what Bhagavad Gita really is about. Therefore, puffed up with academic education, upstarts. And in the end of Bhagavad Gita, it's very interesting. They're studying Bhagavad Gita, telling us all about Bhagavad Gita, but Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, these people can't understand me. Right there in the book. I can only be understood by devotion. Are you devoted to Krishna? No. Then what are you going to tell me? You're commenting on a book that says that you can't understand this book. That you are specifically disqualified from understanding. At the end, what is that? Natapaskaya, napaktaya kadachana. I left my little red book. Can you find my on the table there's my red bag. In the red bag. Yeah. Yes, what's the first line? Idam te natapaskaya, navaktaya kadachana. This book should never be explained to those who are not austere, to those who are not devoted, to those who are envious. They shouldn't, don't throw your pearls before swine. in the Bible it said. Lest they trample them under their feet and turn and rend you. The rest of the quotation. You know, you throw it in front of them, they'll just trample it, and then they'll turn around and, you know, like a boar, turn their tusks on you. So it's very interesting. They're commenting on a book that teaches that you guys can't understand this book. That's their position. So here, Krishna can be understood by hearing. Touch Trinu. And the result of hearing from Krishna is one becomes a samshaya, free from doubt. Elsewhere in Vritstam Gyanasana, what is that? Gyanasana Atmana. That these doubts can be slashed by the weapon of knowledge. By the weapon of knowledledge. And how is that knowledge? What is that knowledge? It's knowledge received from the transcendental source. It's not this, I think that. It seems to me that there are 3 Krishnas or 10 Krishnas or 2.5 Krishnas or whatever their theory is. And everyone has a different theory. That's not knowledge. Maya Pratigyana. That's the pronouncements of men whose knowledge has been stolen by illusion and who therefore imagine that they're advanced in knowledge but are actually advanced in foolishness. So, Shravanam. By hearing, we can understand Krishna. Shravanam, touch Trinam. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, this process of understanding Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, is described in the 2nd chapter of the 1st canto as follows. Shravanam Shrinvatam Sukata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanaha Vrijyantaksto Yabhadrani Vidhunoti Suritsatam Nashtaprayesh Pabhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavat Yuttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki Tada Rajastamo Bhava Kama Lobhara Yastraye Cheta Etairana Vidham Stitam Satve Prasidati Evam Prasanna Manaso Bhagavat Bhakti Yogataha Bhagavat Tattva Vigyanam Mukta Sangasya Jayate Vidyate Hridya Grantis Chidyante Sarva Sanshayaha Kshiyante Chasya Karmani Drishta Eva Atmani Shade. To hear about Krishna from Vedic literature or to hear from him directly through the Bhagavad Gita is itself righteous activity. Academic scholarship is not in itself righteous activity, and often quite the contrary. But hearing about Krishna from Vedic literature, punya shravana kirtana, it's pious activity. And for one who hears about Krishna, Lord Krishna, who is dwelling in everyone's heart, acts as a best wishing friend and purifies the devotee who constantly engages in hearing of him. In this way, a devotee naturally develops his dormant transcendental knowledge. As he hears more about Krishna from the Bhagavatam and from the devotees, he becomes fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. By development of devotional service, one becomes freed from the modes of passion and ignorance, and thus material lusts and avarice are diminished. When these impurities are wiped away, candidate remains steady in his position of pure goodness, becomes enlivened by devotional service, and understands the science of God perfectly. Thus, bhakti yoga severs the hard knot of material affection and enables one to come at once to the stage of asaṁśayam samagam, understanding of the Supreme Absolute Truth, Personality of Godhead. These verses we recognize as very important. In one of the songs that Śrīla Prabhupāda wrote on the Jaladutta when he came to America, he included these verses. So there are, and Prabhupāda's realized purport gives such an understanding of the process by which we can understand Krishna and how it is that this process works. Quite a deep explanation, a deep understanding of what this hearing is. It's not that we're simply hearing and it's a kind of a ritual that we go through, or a discipline that we sit and we attend these lectures, but there's a deep process at work here, that we're hearing about Krishna, and the understanding is coming about by the agency of Krishna himself. Īśvara sarva-bhūtānām kṛte sirjana tiṣṭhati. He's there within the heart, and he is personally acting as the suhrit, the most intimate friend of the devotee. And abhadrani vidhunoti. He himself is getting rid of all the junk. The doubts are due to junk within the heart, and especially due to ignorance. When we're in ignorance, naturally we have doubts. The first time you fly on an airplane, you're all in doubts, you know. What do I do with this ticket, and where do I have to go, and what do I do, and is it safe? Is it hundred doubts? And then when you land, you know, where am I supposed to go, and right? Anything, you know, we start a new job and we're full of doubts about what's going on there, and my future, and the people, and money, it's all, I don't know. And then as we get knowledge of the job, or knowledge of how the airline business works, and knowledge of so many things, then our doubts are gone. We know that I stand on this line, and people started e-tickets, and people are wondering, you mean I don't have a ticket? Is this like, what happens if I get to the front of the line and they say, I'm sorry, Mr. Jones, your name is not here? And now people are accustomed. They know that it's a safe thing, and you do it this way and you do it that way, and their doubts are gone. Their doubts are gone because they have some knowledge about how it works. So we have so many doubts about the Absolute Truth because we're in ignorance of the Absolute Truth. We have no experience. We're covered by ignorance in so many ways. We're impeded by lust, by avarice, kaam, krodh, lobh, mada, moha, matsarja. All so many things are standing in our way. The heart is so full of junk that we can't see even ourselves, what to speak of Krishna. We can't even understand who we are. I'm thinking I'm this body, I'm thinking life is meant for sense gratification, I'm thinking that 20 years or 50 years or 100 years is what it's all about. And what to speak of understanding Krishna? I don't even understand myself. That's the extent of my ignorance. Avaranatmika Shakti has got me so bewildered that I'm being kicked, and I'm thinking, this is nice, I'm being kicked. We're so covered that we're placed in a position which is suffering, and we're thinking, not bad. I've got one of the better cells in the prison. This is quite good. I'm lucky. This is Maya's Avaranatmika Shakti, covering potency. So being so covered, we don't understand material nature and how it works, therefore we're always getting kicked in the head by Maya. And what happened? Why is this happening? Why is this happening to me? How can there be a God if this is happening to me? Or we're thinking that we can grab some sense gratification and be basically get away with it, beat the laws of material, or we don't even know that there are laws of material nature. We'll just get more sense gratification and that will be better. And we don't know that the more sense gratification, the more suffering. So we don't know how material nature works, what it is, or how it's working. We're studying, you know, we think we know. And now we know that by this reaction and that reaction of this element and that element, it brings about this kind of transformation which results in this and this and this. So we're getting expert in mechanics. But we don't understand actually the larger picture of what it is that we're dealing with. We really don't understand what material nature is about, what its purpose is, what's behind it. Because we get some technical understanding, mechanical understanding, and we think that we're great scientists. We've discovered the secrets of the universe. The secret of the universe is Mr. Scientist is going to get kicked in the head again by material nature. So material nature we don't understand, our own selves we don't understand, and what to speak of the Supreme Personality of God. And so our position is pretty bad. We really don't know very much about where we are. And worse still, we think we know. So therefore, one begins with humility. I don't know very much. I don't know very much. Therefore, I saw some item that happened. You know, when you take prasadam, there's always these newspapers. So there was a newspaper, and there was an item that they discovered some manuscripts of Sir Isaac Newton. And it happened to be that stuff that had not much to do about science, it was all about alchemy. It means, basically, as a background, that aside from studying all these laws of nature, he was very curious about what's behind these laws of nature. He was more or less mystically inclined. What is, you know, what's going on in this universe after all? Apart from the mechanics of it, what is the purpose? This question should come to the mind of an intelligent human being. So our position improves when we hear from devotees, because in that association, Krishna is acting as our well-wishing friend, and he's specifically vidhunoti. This V is an intensifier, very much. Vidhunoti. He's cleansing the heart. And nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavat saveya. Regularly hearing, not bhagavat saptaha, 7 days of hearing and then do something else. But the devotees of Krishna regularly hear about Krishna every day, constantly. Nityam bhagavat saveya. Bhagavat saveya, you know, has this dual meaning. One is, or many meanings actually, Bhagavat Seva. When we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, we're serving Srimad Bhagavatam. Just as we say we honor prasad. How do you honor prasad? You eat. So eating prasad with especially a respectful attitude, conscious attitude, is prasad Seva. To serve prasad. Serve, of course, serving, we say serve prasad, we mean distribute, but the person who's eating is also serving prasadam. He's respecting prasadam, he's honoring prasadam. So we honor Srimad Bhagavatam, we serve Srimad Bhagavatam by hearing. By hearing. So that hearing is service. And another meaning is by serving the Bhagavatas, or the devotees of the Lord, Bhagavata Savior, Nityam Bhagavata Savior, Bhagavati Uttama Shloki, Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. Naishtaki means strong, solid, by purification of heart, by regular rendering of service, one becomes solidly established in Krishna consciousness. Or Prabhupada says, it becomes established as an irrevocable fact. This is the one definition of a second class devotee. His faith is not damaged by contrary arguments. A third class devotee has komala shraddha, soft, pliable faith. So somebody comes along and says, you know, you're wasting your time reading this Srimad Bhagavatam. Didn't you know that Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the light? No one comes to the Father but through Him. You're worshipping the devil, but da 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 da. And the third class devotee thinks, oh, maybe I'm worshipping the devil instead of God. Because his faith is soft, so he may be bewildered or carried this way or that way. But a second class devotee is well established in devotional service, and therefore, generally, when there's a contrary argument, he's able to defeat it. And even in those circumstances where he's not equipped to defeat it, he knows that, well, I couldn't defeat it, but it doesn't mean I'm going to deviate from devotional service or give up devotional service. I'll ask somebody for the answer, I'll get the answer, next time I'll be equipped. But he's not perplexed or bewildered or shaken from devotional service. And the first class devotee always wins. He's perfectly equipped with arguments, and therefore he can answer any doubt or any question. So Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki Tadarajastamo Pava Kamalo Padayaschir. Kama means lust, lobha means greed, and adya means along with all the rest of it, everything else that goes with it. Where are these things coming from? Raja and Tamagun. Stitam Satte Prasidati. The devotee becomes situated in goodness, he becomes free from these things. The question so often comes up, how do I get free from lusty desires? How do I get free from greed? How do I get free from maya? How do we get out of the mode of ignorance? Get out of the mode of passion. Because as long as we're in those modes, this is what comes with it. If we increase rajagun, tamagun, or maintain them, then all the stuff that is native to those modes will be with us. Kam, krodh, lobh, mada, moha. And when we come to the mode of goodness, then these things will not be there. And how do we come to that mode of goodness? By being established in devotional service. Evam prasanna manasa. And the symptom of being situated in goodness is prasanna manasa. The mind becomes happy. Prabhupada said this is the first installment or the first sign of a self-realized person. He's jolly. Prabhupada used that word. He's always jolly. Brahmabhuta prasanna nishojati in kakshati. So prasanna manasa. He's a person with a satisfied mind, a happy mind. Why? Bhagavad Bhakti Yoga, because of contact with Bhakti Yoga. And Bhagavad Tattva Vijnana. Vijnana means realized knowledge. Applied knowledge, realized knowledge. Sometimes Prabhupada likes to use scientific knowledge as a translation of Vijnana. Bhagavat Tattva, the truth of Krishna consciousness, and Mukta Sangasya Jata. He becomes liberated. Pidyate Hridaya Grantes, Chidyante Sarva Sanction, the knot in the heart by which we're attached to material illusion is cut. And Sarva Sanction, all the doubts that go with it. Kshiyante Chasya Karmani, Drishta E Bhat Manishure. And one actually sees the personality of Godhead. Then one sees himself, he sees everything in relationship to Krishna. Therefore, only by hearing from Krishna or from his devotee in Krishna consciousness can one understand the science of Krishna. Such a clear explanation of our method. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu many times was discussing with religious leaders or philosophers, and he cut everything down, got right to the core of things by asking two questions. What is the goal of your process? What is the goal of life, and what is your process to achieve it? Yeah, mobile check, please. I forgot to do a gadget check. All mobile silent. Oh, please. Hutch Communications in India had a little circular going around about mobile etiquette, and they said that it may be that God may call you in the temple or the church, but he's unlikely to do it on your mobile. Although there's an innovative group in New Jersey in America, they've found something to do with the mobile, because they're working men and they're scattered in different areas. So every Saturday morning, I think it is, they have a mobile conference. There's a conference, they set up a conference call, because the mobiles are all free on Saturday, they don't charge. And they all call a number, and then they'll do, together they'll chant one round of japa, all, you know, so many 30, 40 people on their mobiles are chanting. And then they'll have someone will speak something Krishna consciousness. Not too long ago they had Dhanadhar Maharaj was calling from Vrindavan. So he was talking to 40 people, and it doesn't cost so much these days to call for 2 cents a minute. So they're good use of a mobile. You hear about Krishna. The same thing. Touch Trinu, just hear about Krishna. Nityam Bhagavat the Saving. So even the mobile can be used. But this was Prabhupada's application of Srila Rupa Goswami's principle. So all of these material things can be used in the service of Krishna. And we can find innovative ways to do that. Always coming back to the simple, it's really a simple process, hearing and chanting. But for hearing and chanting, we can use the microphone, we can use the mobile, we can use the teleconference, we can use the internet, we can use so many things. But we always know that really our process is simple. It's hearing and chanting. And if you take away my mobile, you take away my internet connection, you take away my teleconference, you take away my whatever it is. So it's alright, I'll sit under a tree and chant Hare Krishna. Hear from devotees face to face, and we don't mind. It's not that we're dependent on all these material things, but we'll use them. One reporter asked Srila Prabhupada that if you're against materialism, why are you flying in this airplane? That's an airport question. And why are you flying? Prabhupada said, just so that your airplane won't be entirely useless. And not used in the service of Krishna, the airplane is useless. And when it's used for Krishna's service, then it has some in this way. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Krishna personally is speaking to Arjuna. Maya Asaktamana. The mind should be asakta. The mind is asakta, it's attached. But now it's attached to so many other things. And if we try to just pry it loose from other things, it will be very difficult. But if we attach it to Krishna, asaktamana, then we'll make progress. Asakta, attachment. It's our nature to be attached. Now it's only a question of attached to whom. So that object of attachment should be Krishna. Maya sakta mana partha yogam yunjan manashvaya, taking shelter of Krishna. Asamshayam samagram, completely and without doubts. Understand me by hearing from me. So the, especially in these middle six chapters, Krishna himself and the science of devotional service to Krishna will be described at some length, so that we can understand something about Krishna and be attracted to engage in the service of Krishna. There was an old song in America, 1950s, one of those, you know, typical banal songs, some romance song, that to know him is to love him. And some girl is talking about her boyfriend. And to know him is to love him. So, as applied to Krishna, that's a fact. The more we know about Krishna, the more we're attracted to Krishna, because everything about Krishna is a natural stimulus for love of Krishna. Therefore, we're hearing in the Nectar of Devotion about the qualities of Krishna. Why? Because every one of those qualities is a stimulus to love for Krishna. His cleverness in speaking, his expertise in dressing, his strength, his chivalry, his great learning, everything about Krishna inspires love for Krishna. Everything about Krishna, his qualities, his activities, his name, his form, they stimulate love for Krishna. So to know Krishna is to love Krishna. And the more we know about him, the more we love him. And this is Krishna. And the more we, yes, love Krishna, the more our life becomes successful. Okay, some questions? Are there? There don't have to be, because we're already a little late, maybe? No, we're not a little late. Okay. We're more or less on time.
Just one comment with Rukmini's appearance today in the Lord Vimundi. The day in that shloka was set up, and the person in that shloka put up last year. Shrutva Gunanu, Bona Sundara Shrutva Kanti. Nirvish Shikarno Varehi, Sarto Angatapa, Rupam Vrisham, Vrishimoto Akila Kalabu, Vaihi Achyuta, Pakta Bhamni. Just by listening to the glories of Krishna, she got attached.
She didn't meet Krishna, but Narad Muni or big sages used to come to the court of her father, and naturally they would speak something about Krishna. So she fixed her mind that this is the person that I'm going to accept as my husband. Certainly not Shishupal. Forget this crow. I'm not going to marry him, no way. I want Krishna. And then she made a scheme, proposed to Krishna, and here's what I suggest: you can kidnap me in this such and such way. Just by hearing, she became a child. Yeah. Yes.
Is the hearing Shravana Kirtana Mishra Sarana? But
death. On the time of death, Amta Narayana Smriti is Smarana. So it seems like the hearing at that time is less important anymore.
No, it's not that hearing is not that important. The Prikshit Maharaj went and sat on the Ganges. All of you sages, please chant the glories of Krishna so that I can remember the Lord at the time of leaving my body.
The faculty of hearing is gone.
The faculty of hearing is not gone.
The time of death.
It's not gone. Even at the time of death. Was it here? No, it was in England. One of our devotees, or congregational members, his mother was in hospital, and she was dying, actually. She was in coma. And so there was no question of communicating with her and so on. But they had a tape recorder arranged, and the tape recorder was playing Prabhupada chanting transcendental sound. So we went to see her, and she was, you know, you could see, she looked anxious and tense and so on, even though she was in coma. And then as soon as they put the earphones, they adjusted, you know, I guess the tape about, put the earphones, and you could see all of her features relax. You know, everything became all right. You know, she became very quiet, peaceful, and very, you know, subtly but dramatically changed. Subtly but quite dramatically changed. It's a fact that hearing is not impeded or not stopped by these outward material circumstances. There's a lot of evidence from the medical field about this. People who are supposedly in coma and report accurately the details of what was going on around them while they were supposedly unconscious. This doctor said this to that doctor, and then they did this, and then, you know, sometimes quite complicated procedures and even unexpected procedures that the patient was able to describe with considerable accuracy. And these things were studies have been done, you know, statistical analysis of how accurate they were and so on, indicating that the patients quite often go on hearing, go on perceiving. I don't know how widespread it is, but I think it's fairly widespread now in the medical profession, that the anesthesiologists and others are advised to watch what they say while the patient is on the operating table. And some doctor made a comment like, okay, let's sew her up and go home. And the patient became terrified. You know, they're just going to, like, walk away from me. They're just going to, like, throw me together and leave. And of course the doctors knew what they were saying to one another. It was just, you know, kind of shop talk. But they didn't take into account that our patient is hearing what we're saying. They took it for granted. She's under anesthesia. She doesn't know what we're talking about. She's out cold, as they say. But even out cold, she was hearing. At a certain level, processing what she heard. Or even the mundane sound acts that way. Or even a person who's sleeping. You know, you start calling his name, and you repeatedly call it and call it and call it, and he wakes up. If he's sleeping, why should he wake up? By hearing. Because the hearing sense is active, even when the other senses, you know, you're not seeing anything, you're not feeling anything, but you're hearing. Your sense of hearing is still awake. So at the time of death, even we know the person is in coma, the person is in trance, still we're chanting. Another experience, I have a god sister. She was the pujari for Radha Londoneshwar for quite some time in London. Maybe in New Velocity? Yeah. Anyway, she was for many years the pujari there. She'd worked with BBT earlier. And I happened to be in London when all of a sudden a devotee burst in and said, Dilasini is dying, you have to come. So she was in the hospice there, and we went, a group of devotees, and she was, again, she was unconscious. She'd been in coma for I don't know how long, and she was emaciated and, you know, dying, very clearly dying, and in coma. And the doctors basically said, this is it, and so on. And when we got there and began chanting, she came out of her coma. You know, with just surrounded by doctors and nurses, you might as well be in a coma. There's nothing, you know, nothing out there that's worthwhile. But when the devotees came and began chanting, then she also came out of her coma. She began chanting. She asked for her beads and became communicative. It was simply, you know, where's the transcendental sound? And when the transcendental sound was there, then, and I think then the next morning she died. Left the coma. So we shouldn't underestimate the power of hearing. Shravanam, yes, we want to fix the mind. How does the mind become fixed? By hearing. We're here, we're emphasizing hearing. Hearing is so powerful. Especially in this age, you know, in Satya Yuga, alright, they could just think of Krishna. They just fix their minds. But we can't fix our minds. We have trouble fixing our minds. Our minds fix us. So, but by hearing, we capture the mind. The mind becomes captured by hearing. Even at the last stage, it's not that now hearing doesn't matter, remembering matters. The hearing matters so much more, so that at the time of death, we'll remember. Therefore, we ask, Parikshit Maharaj asks, please, all of you chant the glories of the Lord. Why? So that I'll remember Krishna while leaving this body. Okay.
And so it's nice to hear how you establish it. The Bhagavad Gita mentions the external sense objectives of the shut down in
528. Okay, let's see what 528 is about here.
Shutting down all of here.
Wait a second. Yeah, that's in the yoga process. In dhyana, in the Ashtanga yoga process, they shut down everything. The atyahara, they drive out all the objects of the senses and basically concentrate the consciousness within. That's the system. Our system is different. Although, even then, we know that the transcendentalist chants the Omkar vibration. Why? Focus the mind. Transcendence. What is that? Vyaharan Mamanusvara. 8th chapter. Go ahead.
Yes, he made a point now that maybe we should be absorbed in our future, for instance, that we don't even hear somebody does something else, or we don't hear something, just completely absorbed in it.
Well, that's also there. It's not that hearing, that chanting and hearing is to be done casually. It's a discipline. When we're hearing but not fixing the mind, that's called offensive chanting. I'm hearing one thing and I'm thinking about it. I'm almost working at it, making sure that I don't forget XYZ other thing while I'm chanting. But XYZ other thing is supposed to wait. And it will be there when we're, you know, when we finish that round. It will still be there. It's a discipline. It's a practice. That while I'm chanting, I should be fixing my mind on the sound. That's, yeah. When we're in the kirtan, we should be absorbing ourselves in the sound of pulling in. Not that we're kind of, you know, thinking about so many other things. And there's so much time in the day to think about so many other things. But when we're in the kirtan, we get lost in the kirtan. Get so much. Something else?
For chanting, can we use your plugs?
Well, chanting, can you use my earplugs? No, I use them.
Now, are we supposed to hear what comes out, or can we internally hear what?
I don't understand. What use earplugs for what purpose? What's the idea?
During chanting, usually when we put earplugs, we can hear it better inside.
You're chanting your japa, and you want to use earplugs.
So, is it?
I don't have a. You know, it's not a specific recommendation in the manual. Srila Prabhupada never suggested that we use earplugs. But if you find that the earplugs are helpful, there's no objection. And certainly in certain environments, they could be downright helpful. There's so many, you know, times and places where we're subject to outside sounds in which we have no interest. So if we block those out, there's no harm. And hearing involves, anyway, just physiologically speaking, more than just the ears. The hearing involves actually bone through the bones and the skull and all of that. There's hearing goes on, not just by, it's not just carried through that little hole. No big issue. Yes? Yeah, these things are there in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings. Srila Prabhupada never taught us these things. We don't find, I never saw anywhere Prabhupada instructed, you know, that you should cover your head or turn off the lights in a dark room or do any of these things. He emphasized simply sit and hear and chant. Or even Prabhupada used to walk. Now there are recommendations by different acharyas that you should sit, you shouldn't walk. Prabhupada sometimes was walking and chanting. The main thing is to fix the mind on the sound. There's no rule that you can't. But it's not a specific recommendation that Prabhupada gave us. And I never saw that he was doing it or showing or suggesting to anyone else that they do it. But if you do it, you don't know why. What we hear, we tend to forget. Well, one recommendation, practical recommendation, if you repeat what you hear, you'll remember it. If you repeat what you hear, you'll remember more. Suppose we hear that Krishna is that his servant, he has his servants Raktak and Patrak. Suppose we hear that. So after hearing that, if you meet some other devotee and say that I was hearing this morning that Krishna has two servants, Raktak and Patrak, now it's more fixed. Because you've heard it and you've chanted it also. In a practical, apart from just as a practice saying, all right, I've heard it, I'm going to speak it, particularly preaching. If we just hear and absorb, it will not be as effective as if we go out and speak it to others. Because, number one, that fixes it. Now, I've heard it, and I've repeated it. Even the ordinary material gurus will say, you know, if you attend a lecture and then repeat what you've heard, you'll have greater retention. But now you've practically applied it for a useful purpose also. Not that hearing and remembering is not useful, but in a missionary spirit, you try to reach others. So you've taken advantage of something you've heard, and you've employed that for your program. And you may see also the effect that the person has, or the person doesn't buy it. You know, you say, yeah, well, now you have to convince the person of what you've heard. So that means now you have to bring your intelligence to bear. Oh, wait a second, how do I get this across to this person? So it's where you were just kind of sitting in the class and maybe daydreaming a little bit and hearing something which goes in one ear and out the other. Now, you have a reason to sit there and hear it carefully because you know you're going to go out and maybe need this. And then when you go out and meet someone and talk to them about it, you've had to focus your mind on it because you have to be persuasive. So now it's more fixed. Writing also, Prabhupada mentioned that writing gives you realization because when you write, you have to concentrate your mind. So it's not just a process of receiving, but it's also a process of transmitting. Shravanam kirtanam. The shravanam should bring about kirtanam. And the kirtanam will improve the shravanam. And the shravanam and kirtanam will strengthen the smaranam. And that will bring padasevanam. So all these methods of devotional service enhance one another. If we just absorb the knowledge and keep it to ourselves, we'll lose it. In the third, is it third canto? It's someplace in the Bhagavatam. It's mentioned that that a Brahmin who receives knowledge and doesn't distribute it, loses it, the way that a cracked pot leaks water. Brahmin's business is to teach. Not just to be learned, but to make others learn it. So when we accept, when we hear within that context, our hearing will be more effective. We'll bring about a greater result. Is that okay? Raghu Chandra Prabhu in Kuwait was saying to me that now I have to study the books more because, you know, now before I was just basically practicing. My wife and I were reading, we were chanting, we were doing the worship. Now people are coming and we have to preach. So now we have to, you know, we have to know this stuff in such a way, not just theoretically. We know it, we know, we're convinced, we're following. But now we have to be able to present it to others in a persuasive fashion. So now we're reading all the books in a, you know, in a new way, in a different way. Because people are coming and we have to present it to them. So this is, you know, that's what Prabhupada wanted us to do, not just learn it and follow it, but also transmit it. So that spirit, hearing in that spirit, just like learning a foreign language, if you know I'm going to have to talk to people, then I better learn, you know, do the drills, learn the pronunciation, learn the meaning of the words, because I'm going to need this. So we need it both for ourselves, for our own improvement, and to be able to transmit this message to others. And transmitting it to others will bring about further improvement in our own position, our own internal understanding. Okay. Anything else? Am I running up against the clock a little bit? Yeah. Okay. Well, there's another question now.
Well, in Bhagavad Gita, and Lord Krishna says that an intelligent person sees action meaning inaction and inaction meaning action. Can you please explain?
Krishna says the intelligent person sees inaction in action and action in inaction. So I'm not going to answer your question. Because we run out of time. So I'm going to give you action in inaction. I'm not going to answer your question. The materially active person is spiritually doing nothing. And the spiritually active person who appears to be doing nothing, that is, he's not building another wing on his house, he's not working an extra job, he's not buying 3 new cars, he's not, where everybody else is active, he's doing nothing. But he's actually going somewhere. Elsewhere, Yadasha Sarvabhutanam Tasyam Jagati Samini Tasyam Jagati Bhutani Samasha Pashitamani. What's night for the self-realized person is day for the materialist, and what's that, and vice versa. So, the materialist thinks these people are doing nothing. Why don't they get a job? Why don't they do something useful? Why don't they contribute to society? They don't see that the devotee is doing more than anyone. And the materialists are thinking, we're doing so much. And the Krishna conscious person thinks, these people are doing nothing. They're dead. They're dead now.
Okay.
Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah.
Do you have an announcement or two?
Do
you have an announcement or two?
Yeah, just a very quick one. On Wednesday, Maharaj is going to be again with us. And Maharaj was saying that session is for those above, 30 and above. And that session is how to retire. But I'm sure devotees do not want to even wait till 30. They want to plan on their retirement much earlier. While they were discussing with Maharaj, those who are on the materialistic front have seen in my office also.